This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible. Chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang. Oh, you pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you. Well, now, hello and welcome to Kidnappers Kids. It's Dex here. Hi, how are you today? Let's see. Let's listen to Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Goldilocks, Goldilocks went to see three bears. She walked in while they were out and sat down on their chairs. Goldilocks, Goldilocks, in a naughty mood, started snooping all around and tasted all their food. Here and there she started leaping, almost lost her head. Bears came home and found her sleeping in their private beds. Goldilocks, Goldilocks, that's no way to play. Don't go into strangers' homes, better keep away.
Hello, boys and girls. Did you ever hear a clock talk? Well, you're going to hear one now. I'm a grandfather's clock, and I live in the home of three bears, Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear. One day, just before breakfast, they all went out in the woods to visit their grandfather, who lived in a little house on a big hill. While they were gone, a little girl with golden hair walked up to the door of the house and looked through the window. Her name was Goldilocks, and she had a wonderful doll that talked, whose name was Priscilla. When Goldilocks saw that no one was home, she said to her doll,
Priscilla, there's no one at home. Do you think we should go in? I'm tired and would like to rest a while.
I'm sure no one would mind, as long as we don't take anything.
Oh, I wouldn't think of taking anything that didn't belong to me.
Well, let's go in. So Goldilocks and Priscilla went into the house. And when Goldilocks looked around, she saw three bowls of porridge on the table. One was a large red bowl, the second a medium-sized yellow bowl, and the third a tiny little blue bowl. They looked very inviting, and she was hungry. So she said to her doll,
Priscilla, I'm so hungry. Do you think it would be wrong if I tasted a teeny bit of the porridge?
Well, not if you take just a teeny-weeny bit. So Goldilocks took a little taste of the big red bowl. When she tasted it, she said,
This porridge is too hot and too salty.
Then she tasted the porridge in the second yellow bowl.
This porridge is too cold and too sweet.
And so she tasted the porridge in the little blue bowl and said,
Oh, this one is just right and delicious. Yummy, yum, yum.
And little Goldilocks ate up all the porridge in the little blue bowl.
I didn't mean to eat it up, but it tasted so good, and I was so hungry I couldn't help it.
No harm done. Let's take a look at the next room. When they walked into the next room, they found it was the living room, and there they saw three chairs, one big red chair, one middle-sized yellow chair, and a tiny little blue chair.
Oh, what nice chairs. I'm so tired. I think I'll sit down on this big red chair.
Goldilocks sat in the big chair, but it didn't fit her. Then she tried the middle-sized yellow chair, and that was too big. Finally, she sat down on the little blue chair, and crash! It broke into 1,000 pieces.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break this chair, but I was so tired. I had to sit down someplace, and this little chair looked like the best. I'm so tired.
Well, let's find the bedroom.
So they walked upstairs, and there was a bedroom with three pretty beds. One was a large red bed, one a medium-sized yellow bed, and the third was a tiny little blue bed. First, she tried the big red bed and found it too high. Then she tried the medium-sized yellow bed and found it too hard. Finally, she climbed into the little blue bed, and it was so soft and comfortable that she fell fast asleep right away. Off to Slumberland she went. Just about that time, the Papa Bear, the Mama Bear, and the little baby bear returned home. When they walked through the door, Papa Bear said,
I'm hungry as a bear.
Well, you are a bear.
So I am. I guess that's why I'm hungry. Ha, ha, ha!
Papa made it funny.
I'm hungry, and I'm going to eat my porridge.
And as Papa Bear picked up his big red bowl, he said,
Someone has been eating my porridge. It's all upset.
And someone has been eating my porridge, too. It's all upset.
Gosh and gee, someone has been in my porridge and has eaten it all up.
So they have. What do you know? I wonder who it could be. I'm tired. I'm going into the living room and sit down.
So they all went into the living room. And when Papa Bear saw his big red chair, he said,
Someone has been sitting in my big red chair.
And someone has used my yellow chair, too.
Oh, and look at my little blue chair. It's broken into thousands of pieces.
This is getting serious. Somebody's been in the house. Let's go upstairs in the bedroom and look around.
So the three bears walked upstairs into the bedroom. And first, Papa Bear looked at his big red bed and said,
Someone has slept in my bed.
And someone has slept in my bed.
And when the little baby bear looked in her bed, she cried,
Look, Daddy, look, Mommy. Someone is sleeping in my bed. It's a pretty little girl with golden locks.
The voices awakened Goldilocks. When she opened her eyes and saw the three bears, she was so frightened, she jumped off the bed, ran down the stairs and out of the house, running all the way home. And she forgot all about Priscilla, her doll.
Look, she left her little doll.
Please, don't hurt me, and don't blame Goldilocks. She just tasted your porridge because she was hungry, sat in your chairs because she was tired, and laid down to sleep in this bed because she was sleepy. She meant no harm.
What do you know? A talking doll. Don't be frightened, little doll. We won't hurt you. So it was Goldilocks. I know her. She lives in that little house at the other end of the forest. Come, little doll. We'll take you home to her.
So they brought Priscilla back to Goldilocks' house. And do you know what? They became such good friends that they visit each other every week. And when they visit Goldilocks, the little baby bear sleeps in a special little bed next to Goldilocks. And when she visits the three bears, she sleeps in a special bed they built for her in the little bear's room. And they all lived happily ever after.
I will now read a poem. Once I find it in this book here, here it is. And this poem is called Rice Pudding. What is the matter with Mary Jane? She's crying with all her might and main, and she won't eat her dinner, rice pudding, again. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? I promised her dolls and a daisy chain, and a book about animals, all in vain. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? She's perfectly well and she hasn't a pain. But look at her, now she's beginning again. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? I've promised her sweets and a ride in the train. And I've begged her to stop for a bit and explain. What is the matter with Mary Jane? What is the matter with Mary Jane? She's perfectly well and she hasn't a pain, and it's lovely rice pudding for dinner again. What is the matter with Mary Jane? Anyway, next up we have the little red hen.
Once upon a time, in a neat white house in the country, there lived a little red hen with her family of baby chicks. Near the little red hen, there also lived a cat, a goose, and a pig. One bright summer day, the little red hen found a grain of wheat. How nice, she said to herself. I will plant it, and soon it will grow into a fine stalk of grain. She asked the cat, will you help me plant the grain of wheat?
Not I, said the cat.
She asked the goose, will you help me plant the grain of wheat?
Not I, said the goose.
Then she asked the pig, will you help me plant the grain of wheat?
Not I, said the pig.
Then I will do it myself, said the little red hen. She dug a small hole in the ground and planted the grain. Soon the little seed grew into a fine stalk of wheat. The little red hen knew that it was time to reap it. She turned to the cat, the goose, and the pig. Who will help me reap the wheat? She said.
Not I, said the cat.
Not I, said the goose.
Not I, said the pig.
Then I will do it myself, said the little red hen. She took a large scythe and reaped the wheat. After the wheat was all gathered, it had to be ground. Who will help me carry the wheat to the mill? Asked the little red hen.
Not I, said the cat.
Not I, said the goose.
Not I, said the pig.
Then I will do it myself, said the little red hen. She put the wheat in a basket, and she and her baby chicks set out on their way. When they reached the mill, the miller ground the wheat into flour. Then the little red hen took it all the way home again. When the little red hen returned, she and her baby chicks sat down to rest under a tree. The cat, the goose, and the pig were playing nearby. Who will help me make the flour into dough? She asked the animals.
Not I, said the cat.
Not I, said the goose.
Not I, said the pig.
Then I will do it myself, said the little red hen. First, she heated some milk. Then she added some butter, sugar, salt, yeast, and the finely sifted flour. She kneaded the dough and placed it in an earthenware bowl to rise. Who will help me bake the bread? She asked the animals.
Not I, said the cat.
Not I, said the goose.
Not I, said the pig.
Then I will, said the little red hen. She made a roaring fire in the oven, and when it was just hot enough, she put the bread in to bake. As soon as the loaf was crusty and brown, the little red hen took it out of the oven and set it in the open window to cool. The animals outside the house noticed the delicious smell. They all gathered around. The little red hen came to the window. Who will help me eat the bread? She asked.
I will, said the cat.
I will, said the goose.
I will,
said the pig. And they all started for the house. The little red hen stopped them at the door. You did not plant the grain, she said. You did not reap it. You did not carry it to the mill. You did not make the flour into dough. You did not bake the bread. You shall not eat it. My baby chicks and I will eat the bread. And they did.
There once was a little red hen who lived in a little white house with all her baby chicks. A goose and a pig and a cat would frequently stop to chat, but if the little red hen needed
needed help, you can bet they would scat. When the little red hen found a grain of wheat, she needed lots of help to plant the wheat, to reap the wheat, to carry it to the mill, to grind the wheat and make the dough. When on to the oven the dough would go, and out would come the bread.
Not I.
Not I.
Not I, said the goose and the pig and the cat, when the little red hen needed help.
So everything that had to be done was done by the little red hen. And when the bread was ready to eat, the goose and the pig and the cat said,
I will,
I will,
I will.
The little red hen said, no, 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 and closed the door right in their face. Each chick sat down at his regular place. All had a wonderful feast.
Dear friends, if you've got a story, a song, a poem, or a joke that you'd like to share with us, you could give us a call and let us know all about it on 8788710. And now, it's the Gingerbread Man.
Once upon a time, there was a little old woman and a little old man. They hadn't any little boys or girls of their own, so they lived in a little old house all alone. One day, the little old woman was making gingerbread.
I will make a little gingerbread boy, she said.
So she rolled the dough out flat and cut it in the shape of a little boy. She put a nice little jacket of chocolate on him and a row of currants down the front for buttons. Then she made eyes of fat raisins, a mouth of pink sugar frosting, and a little pink cap of pink frosting. She pinched his gingerbread nose and ears into shape and made two nice, good-sized feet.
Oh, now we'll have a little gingerbread boy, laughed she.
She laid him flat on his back in the pan, popped him into the oven, and closed the door. Then she went about her work, sweeping and cleaning the house, sweeping and cleaning, and she forgot all about the little gingerbread boy. He baked, he got glossy brown all over, he got hot, very hot, and still the old woman swept and cleaned and cleaned and swept.
Mercy! Said the little old woman at last, sniffing the air. The gingerbread boy is burning.
She ran to the oven, opened the door, and up jumped the gingerbread boy, hopped on the floor, ran across the kitchen, out of the door, down the walk, through the gate, and down the road as fast as his gingerbread legs could carry him. The little old woman and the little old man ran after him, calling,
Stop, stop, little gingerbread boy.
The gingerbread boy looked back and laughed and called out,
Run, 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 catch me if you can. You can't get me, for I'm the gingerbread man. I am.
And they couldn't catch him. So the gingerbread boy ran on and on. Soon he came to a cow. Sniffed the cow.
Stop, little gingerbread boy. I would like to eat you.
But the little gingerbread boy laughed and said,
I'd run away from a little old woman. I'd run away from a little old man. And I can run away from you. I can.
So the cow ran after him. But the gingerbread boy shouted back,
Run, 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 run. Catch me if you can. You can't get me.
And the cow couldn't catch him. So the little gingerbread boy ran on and on. Soon he came to a horse.
Please stop, little gingerbread boy, said the horse. You look very good to eat.
But the little gingerbread boy called out,
I've run away from a little old woman. I've run away from a little old man. I've run away from a cow. And I can run away from you. I can.
So the horse ran after him. When the little gingerbread boy was past, he looked back and called,
Run, 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 run. Catch me if you can. You can't stop me, you can't stop me, for I'm the gingerbread man. I am.
And the horse couldn't catch him. By and by, the little gingerbread boy came to a barn where threshers were working. The threshers saw him running and called out as they tried to pick him up, "Here is a gingerbread boy. He smells good. Do not run so fast, little gingerbread boy. You look good to eat." But the little gingerbread boy ran faster and faster and called out,
"I've run away from a little old woman. I've run away from a little old man. I've run away from a cow. I've run away from a horse.
So the threshers ran after him. But the gingerbread boy looked back and laughed.
Run, 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 run. Catch me if you can. You can't stop me, you can't stop me, for I'm the gingerbread man. I am.
And the threshers could not catch him. Then the little gingerbread boy ran faster than ever. He ran and ran till he came to a field full of mowers. When the mowers saw how fine he looked, they ran after him, calling out, wait a bit, little gingerbread boy. We will eat you. But the little gingerbread boy laughed harder than ever and ran like the wind. Oh, ho, 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 he cried.
I've run away from a little old woman. I've run away from a little old man. I've run away from a cow. I've run away from a horse. I've run away from a barn full of threshers. And I can run away from you. I can.
And the mowers couldn't catch him. By this time, the little gingerbread boy was very proud of himself. He strutted, he danced, he pranced. He thought no one on earth could catch him. Pretty soon he saw a fox coming across a field. The fox looked at him and began to run. But the little gingerbread boy ran faster still and shouted out,
Run, 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 catch me if you can. You can't get me, you can't get me, for I'm the gingerbread man. I am. I've run away from a little old woman. I've run away from a little old man. I've run away from a cow. I've run away from a horse. I've run away from a barn full of fences. I've run away from a field full of mowers. And I can run away from you. I can. Said
the fox very politely. I wouldn't catch you if I could. I should never dream of disturbing you. Just then, the little gingerbread boy came to a river. He dared not jump into the water. He would have melted away, frosting cap and all, if he had. Still, the cow, the horse, and the people were chasing hot on his heels, and he was forced to cross the river to keep out of their reach.
Jump on my tail and I will take you across, said the fox.
So the little gingerbread boy jumped on the fox's tail and the fox swam into the river. A little distance from the shore, the fox said,
Little gingerbread boy, I think you had better get on my back or you may fall off.
So the little gingerbread boy jumped on the fox's back. After swimming a little farther, the fox said,
The water is deep. You may get wet where you are. Jump up on my shoulder.
So the little gingerbread boy jumped up on the fox's shoulder. When they were near the other side of the river, the fox cried out suddenly,
The water grows deeper still. Jump up on my nose. Jump up on my nose.
So the little gingerbread boy jumped up on the fox's nose. Then the fox sprang ashore in a twinkling and threw back his head and snip, snip, snap. At last and at last, that gingerbread boy went the way of every single gingerbread boy that ever came out of an oven.
Run, 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 run. Catch
catch me if you can. You can't get me, you can't get me, for I'm the gingerbread man.
Pirates abound, it's Treasure Island, Jim, me lad.
Many years ago, there lived a young lad named Jim Hawkins. His mother ran a hotel where an old sea captain lived. One day, the old sea captain, named Billy Bones, called Jim Hawkins to his side.
Jim, me lad, in the old sea chest in the corner of my room, you'll find a map. It's a map of pirates' treasure buried on Treasure Island. I'm too old to ever sail the seas again. Take this map and seek your fortune.
It was a wonderful day that Jim Hawkins set sail for Treasure Island. All the men on board were singing a real pirate song.
15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho, and a bottle of rum. 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho, and a bottle of rum. Yo-ho, yo-ho, a sailing we will go. 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho, and a bottle of rum.
Captain Smollett, the good captain of the ship, set a course for the South Seas. And what with a blue sky above and a brisk wind to fill the sails, things looked fine indeed. The salt air made young Jim a little hungry, so he went below and crawled into a big barrel of apples. He had just picked out a nice red one when he heard voices. So he ducked down and listened.
Long John Silver is my name. I'm feared all over the bounding main. I'm a pirate bold and I steal your gold. Long John Silver is my name. Well, me hearties, just leave everything to old John Silver. As soon as that lad Jim Hawkins gets us to Treasure Island, we'll seize the ship and put an end to them. Aye. You may lay to that, me buckos.
Oh, we're with you, Long John.
Young Jim Hawkins was so scared he held his breath. As soon as Long John Silver and the pirates left, he ran to find the captain.
Sir?
Hi there, lad. What's the trouble?
Oh, it's just awful, sir. Long John Silver's planning to steal a treasure, and he said...
There, Jim. Now, what was it he said?
Oh, sir, he said he'd grab the treasure and put an end to us.
Don't worry, Jim. We'll take care of Long John Silver.
Land ho on the starboard! Treasure Island! Land ho!
15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho, and a bottle of rum. 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho, and a bottle of rum.
When the ship reached Treasure Island, Captain Smollett called together the loyal men who were not with the pirates, and they all went ashore in the ship's longboat. As they pulled away from the ship, they could hear the pirates singing.
They're outnumbered 3-1, yo-ho, and a bottle of rum. They're outnumbered 3-1, yo-ho, and a bottle of rum.
Look, look, Captain Smollett. They're going to fire the ship's cannon at us. Gosh, that was close.
Stand by to come ashore and take cover in that stockade just over the hill.
By the time Captain Smollett and his crew reached the stockade, Long John Silver and the pirates had come ashore, and the fight was soon begun. All night the battle raged with the sound of muskets and steel filling the air as they fought for their lives. Jim Hawkins was so tired from loading muskets and passing them to his friends that he thought the day would never end. Finally, by the next morning, Long John Silver and his men gave up the fight and surrendered to Captain Smollett. When Long John saw that he had lost the fight, he tried to make a bargain.
Shiver me timbers. Mateys, you fought me fair and square. And to show you I'm not such a bad sort, I'll help you find the treasure.
So Captain Smollett and Long John Silver joined forces, and together they set out to find the treasure. When they reached the spot marked on the map, an awful thing happened.
Lost my wooden leg. It's nothing but a hole in the ground. Someone stole the treasure.
Jim Hawkins felt so bad he almost cried. As everyone was about to go back to the ship, they heard someone laughing. When they turned around, there stood an old man with a long white beard.
I know where the treasure is.
Who are you? Where did you come from?
I'm Old Ben Gunn. I'm Old Ben Gunn. The treasure I have found. I'm Old Ben Gunn. I'm Old Ben Gunn. I dug it from the ground. Just follow me and you will see just where the treasure lies. I'm Old Ben Gunn. I'm Old Ben Gunn. The treasure I have found.
So they followed Old Ben Gunn across the island to a cave where he had hidden the treasure.
Captain Smollett, it is the treasure. All the gold and silver in the whole world must be here.
Aye, that it is, lad. There's enough gold and silver to last us for the rest of our lives.
With the treasure safely stored on board ship, Jim Hawkins, Captain Smollett, Long John Silver, and even Old Ben Gunn set sail for home.
Sailing, sailing, soon we'll be sailing home. We'll take the treasure with us and we never more will roam. Sailing, sailing, all of our men so true. We'll share the pirate treasure, each will get what he is due.
I hope you like heights, because this one is Jack and the Beanstalk.
You've heard of me, my name is Jack. I'm the Jack that climbed the beanstalk. Now listen to what happened to me on the day I climbed the beanstalk.
In the days of King Alfred, there lived a poor widow with an only child named Jack. One day she said to him,
"We have not money enough to purchase even a bit of bread. Nothing now remains but our poor cow. Jack, take the cow into the village and sell it, but mind you, make a good trade."
"Just leave it to me. I'll take care of everything."
That evening, Jack came home with his trade, a paltry handful of beans.
"You silly boy, these few beans will do us no good. They're not even worth keeping."
With that, the woman threw the beans out the window, and they both went to bed without any supper. During the night, a strange thing happened. The beans took root in the garden, and a beanstalk started growing, and growing, and growing. The stalk grew so high that the top was lost in the sky. When Jack awoke the next morning, he saw the giant beanstalk and decided to climb to the top.
"I'll climb the giant beanstalk until I reach the top. I'll climb the giant beanstalk, I'll never, never stop. Up and up and up I go, how can it be so high? Where it ends I'll never know until I reach the sky. I'll climb the giant beanstalk until I reach the top. Until I reach the top."
After climbing for some hours, Jack found himself in a strange country. As he walked down the road, he saw a large mansion with a plain woman standing at the door. When he asked the woman for a crust of bread and a night's lodging, she said,
"Oh, no. No, I couldn't do that. My husband is a giant, you know."
"No, I didn't know."
"Well, he is. And if he finds you here, he'll eat you up." "Oh, dear, I hear him coming now. You'd better get in the house quickly. Hide in the oven."
3, 5, 4, 4, I am a hungry giant. "Wife, get me my supper, and then bring me my magic hand."
From his hiding place, Jack watched the giant eat huge quantities of food. Then, when his hen was brought to him, the giant roared,
"Lay a golden egg."
And the hen laid an egg of solid gold.
"Lay another. And another."
Every time the giant said this, the hen laid a larger egg than before. But soon the giant grew bored. And as Jack watched, he fell sound asleep. Then Jack crept out of the oven, seized the hen, and ran off with her. Quickly, he climbed down the beanstalk and was safely home. Some months later, Jack prepared a disguise and decided to climb the beanstalk a second time.
"I'll climb the giant beanstalk until I reach the top. I'll climb the giant beanstalk, I'll never, never stop."
When Jack reached the giant's mansion, the woman was at the door as before.
"Please, ma'am, may I have a crust of bread and a night's lodging?"
"Oh, no. The last stranger who was here stole my husband's hen."
"Please, ma'am, I'm hungry and tired."
"Well, all right. But hurry inside. I hear my husband coming now. Hide in the lumber closet.
Fee, fly, fo, fum, I am a hungry giant. Wife, get me my supper, and then bring me my money bags.
Jack watched the giant eat his huge supper and then count his money. Soon the giant grew tired and fell fast asleep. Jack came out of the closet, took the money bags, and made off with them. Quickly, he climbed down the beanstalk and made his way home. For many months, Jack spoke no more of the beanstalk. Then one morning, he prepared a brand new disguise and decided to climb the beanstalk a third time. Again, the giant's wife failed to recognize him, and so agreed to hide him in the copper kettle. No sooner was he in the kettle than the giant returned.
Fee, fly, fo, fum, I am a hungry giant. Wife, I smell fresh meat. I am going to search the room.
Jack sat terrified in the kettle as he watched the giant search every corner of the room. Finally, the giant's hand reached out for the lid of the kettle. But just then, the giant got tired of searching, and he called out,
"Wife, bring me my magic harp!"
Jack peeped under the copper lid and saw a most beautiful harp being brought to the giant.
"Play, harp! Play!"
The harp started playing without anybody touching it. When Jack saw this, he decided he must have the harp. And when the giant fell asleep, Jack seized it and started to run off. But the magic harp, finding itself in strange hands, called out, "The giant woke up and saw Jack scampering away.
"Oh, you villain! Wait till I catch you! I'll eat you alive!"
Jack ran to the beanstalk and scampered down as fast as he could, calling,
"Mother! Mother, give me a hatchet! The giant is coming down the beanstalk!"
Jack took his hatchet and with one swoop cut the beanstalk off at the root. The giant fell headlong into the garden and was killed. So all ended well, and nothing more was ever seen or heard of the giant or the beanstalk.
Stories and stories and stories. The Trojan Horse.
Many years ago, the brave armies of Greece and Troy were locked in a long, bitter war. The Trojans had captured a beautiful Greek princess named Helen and held her within their fortress city of Troy. It did not seem possible that any man could break into the fortress city of Troy. For days, weeks, months, the Greek soldiers from their camp on a beach near the city assaulted the walls of Troy, but they were always beaten back. Then Ulysses, a great leader of the Greeks, said to his men, "I have a plan. It is dangerous, but if it works, the Trojans themselves will take us through the gates of their city." At the order of Ulysses, the Greek soldiers set to work cutting down huge trees, making the wood into planks. From the towers of Troy, the Trojan soldiers watched a big building grow taller and taller day by day until it was 6 stories high. And when the Greeks pulled away all the work ladders and scaffolds, there stood a huge wooden horse, 80 feet tall. Along the towering walls of Troy, the soldiers and the people gathered to look out across the plain at the great wooden horse. They wondered what it was for, what it meant. The Trojans did not know that Ulysses and 5 Greek soldiers lay hidden in a dark, secret passage inside the wooden horse. All through the night, fire blazed brightly on the beach. The Greeks were burning their tents just as if they were giving up their camp and sailing back home. When morning came, not a Greek ship or soldier remained. But where they had camped stood the great Trojan horse. The Trojan people poured out of the city to the beach so they could look more closely at the strange wooden animal. They thought it would make a great monument to their victory over the Greeks. The Princess Cassandra, daughter of the king of the Trojans, warned her people of this Greek gift, but no one would listen. The Trojans decided to pull the great horse inside the walls, into the city of Troy itself. The Trojans tied thick ropes around the legs of the huge wooden horse. Hundreds of men took a hand at the ropes. Others lined up behind the horse. Whooping and hollering, laughing at the Greeks who had never been able to scale the towering walls of Troy, the Trojans tugged and pushed and pulled the huge wooden horse slowly from the beach, over the plains, and through the gates of Troy. In the dark, secret passage of the wooden horse, Ulysses and the five soldiers lay quietly waiting. They could feel the horse being moved. What the Trojans had decided to do, neither Ulysses nor his soldiers knew. Suddenly, after a whole day and half a night, the Trojan horse moved no more. An hour passed. Still the horse did not move. Ulysses gave a signal. The soldiers felt their way silently down the dark, secret passage, following Ulysses. Cautiously, he opened the trap door. Just as he hoped, the Trojans had brought the horse inside the walls of Troy. The city was sleeping now, and the walls were unguarded. Ulysses drew his sword. He ordered the soldiers to follow, and he dashed for the main gates of the city. The Greek soldiers quickly tied the sleeping Trojan guards, while Ulysses scampered up the sentry tower. Holding a torch high above his head, he signaled to the Greek army, which had turned around and sailed back to the beach during the night. And even as Ulysses and his men opened the gates of Troy, the Greek army was marching across the plain. Caught completely by surprise, the Trojans were easily defeated by the Greek soldiers, who found their beautiful princess and took her back safely to Greece. And brave Ulysses was named the greatest of the Greek heroes.
And now it's time for Sleeping Beauty. Stay awake for this one.
The king and queen of Felicia called a celebration for their people. The queen had given birth to a beautiful princess, and the whole nation was to join in the party before the baby was baptized. All day long, the streets of Felicia echoed with fanfares and drums, cheers and shouts of hurrah for the princess. And as darkness fell on the palace, the great banquet began in the baby's honor. A special table was prepared for the six fairies who were to be the princess's godmothers. From out of the clouds, the six fairies arrived, sparkling with starlight and dazzling the court. "Stand for the fairies of Felicia!" bellowed the king, as more fanfares announced their arrival, and the baby princess gave a little cry of excitement as they flew around her crib. "Make way! Make way! The table is laid!" The fairies settled at their table and greeted the king. "My lord, you are blessed with a beautiful daughter, a princess for Felicia. We will guard and protect her, and tonight we bring gifts in her honor." "Then I thank you," said the king. "Bring me the gifts, and then we shall eat." "Not so fast," came a scream from the roof of the hall. "Not so fast. You seem to have forgotten somebody." Up in the roof was a seventh fairy, a dark and dusty old fairy. "Did you forget to invite me to be the baby's godmother too? Forget me, did you?" The king couldn't believe his eyes. "You! Where have you been? We haven't seen you here for 50 years, said the king, astonished. "How could I invite you? I thought you were dead. Come, please join us." The king and all the guests stood and looked as the dark fairy flew down to the table and settled as an extra place was quickly laid for her. There was silence in the hall. "Well now," said the dark fairy, "where are all these presents? Because I have one that is very special." "Yes," said the king nervously, "let us see the presents." Watching this all happen was the good fairy godmother. She slipped away from the table and hid behind a curtain in case the dark fairy gave a curse to the baby princess instead of a gift. Then she could give the last gift and undo her spell. Each of the fairies stood and gave their presents. The first fairy gave her beauty, the second, grace. The third and fourth gave the baby health and kindness. The fifth, intelligence. Then the dark fairy stood to give her gift. The whole hall fell silent. The king and queen could only look on and listen.
"What pretty gifts for such a pretty girl," said the dark fairy. "Then I'm sure mine will be something different. On the day that the baby princess has her 16th birthday," she announced with spite on her lips, "she will prick her finger on a spindle and will die!"
With that, the dark fairy flew high into the hall and out of the window and was gone. There was silence again in the hall. The good fairy godmother came out from behind the curtain. "I will try to help," she said. "I cannot stop this spell, but I can change it. If the princess pricks her finger on a spindle, she will not die, but she will sleep for 100 years. Meanwhile, you must go out into the country and burn every spindle that exists, find every spinning wheel and destroy it." And so they did. The king sent out his men to every corner of the land, and wherever he found a spindle or a wheel, it was burnt. The young princess grew into a beautiful girl, and she was loved by the people of Felicia. Soon it was to be her 16th birthday, and the king sent his men out into the land once more to make sure that there were no spindles or wheels that could harm her. As the sun rose on the day itself, the princess saw the daylight over the hills and wanted to see the dawn from the top of the castle. She left her room and climbed the spiral staircase to the roof. As she climbed, she saw a little doorway that she'd never noticed before.
She pushed the door open carefully and saw inside a little old lady spinning at an old dusty spinning wheel. "What are you doing?" she said. "Spinning cloth, my dear," said the old lady. "Would you like to try it?"
"Oh, I'd love to. Please show me how," said the princess.
She sat down at the wheel and within a minute pricked her finger on the sharp, glistening spindle and right away fell into a deep, deep sleep. The old lady disappeared into thin air. The king and queen took her lifeless body and laid it in the finest silk, in the grandest state bedroom, and called for the good fairy godmother. The whole country cried for the princess. "I shall do what I promised," said the good fairy godmother. "The princess will sleep for 100 years. With a wave of her magic wand, she let go a cloud of stardust. Everywhere it settled, time stood still. Soon the whole palace had stopped. Even the flames that burnt in the grate stood motionless. Nobody entered the palace for 100 years. The land of Felicia was a strange, unhappy place. Weeds grew amongst the stones of the castle, and trees climbed the walls. Soon you would hardly know that there was a castle underneath. 100 years later, to the very day of the princess' birthday, a young and handsome prince came riding by. He saw through the undergrowth the stones of the old castle, and drew his long sword and cut his way to the door. He pushed and pushed, and the old oak door creaked open. Inside, he saw a truly amazing sight. The servants and courtiers, trumpeters and cooks, stood still as statues, where they had stood for 100 years. The prince climbed the great staircase, noticing the flames standing still in the fire grates. He walked along the gallery and entered the stateroom where the princess lay asleep. The king and queen were at her side, looking adoringly at her sleeping eyes. Who was this lovely princess, so young, so tender, so pure a vision before him? A sleeping beauty. The prince walked to her bedside and stared at the princess. He leaned over the bed and kissed her gently on the forehead. It was a magical kiss. The whole room, the whole castle glistened again as the starlight released the spell and the sleeping beauty. Her eyes opened for the first time in 100 years. Their eyes met, and love welled up inside. The flames again waved up the chimneys. The castle came back to life. The spell was gone, and the princess was free to marry a handsome prince.
Thank you so much for sitting there quietly listening or running around and listening at the same time. It's been grand. And we're going to finish off with Peter, Paul and Mary, Puff the Magic Dragon. Have a great week. Don't forget now, be kind to one another.
Ta-da for now.
The magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Together they would travel out perched on Puff's gigantic tail. Noble kings and princes would bow whene'er they came. Pirate ships would lower their flags when Puff roared out his name. Oh, Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. A dragon lives forever, but not so little boys. Painted wings and giant's rings make way for other toys. One gray night it happened, Jackie Paper came no more. And Puff, that mighty dragon, he ceased his fearless roar. His head was bent in sorrow, green scales fell like rain. Puff no longer went to play along the cherry lane. Without his lifelong friend, Puff could not be brave. So Puff, that mighty dragon, sadly slipped into his cave. Oh, Puff, the magic dragon, lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Puff the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.